Please pray with me. May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be pleasing in your sight, O God, the rock that bore us. Amen. More than any other biblical prophet, I suspect that Elijah has the gift of teaching us how to die and to die well. He skirts the margins of death from the very beginning of his ministry. He is the prophet who fled and survived on the generosity of ravens after telling the idol-worshiping King Ahab about a coming drought and famine. He continued his familiarity with death by the company he continued to keep. When the creek near where he was staying dried up, he traveled north until he found a widow and her son preparing to cook their very last meal before they starved to death. He was able to stave off their deaths and his own with the miraculous provision of jars of flour and oil that never ran empty for the duration of the drought, only for that child to die of illness. Through bitter complaints to God, he was able to bring breath back into the child's body. And all this was just in the very first chapter that we meet him. Elijah was also the prophet who told Jezebel that she would fall victim to the violence with which she threatened others after she and Ahab stole the ancestral vineyard from Naboth to plant a vegetable garden. He's the prophet who had the famous showdown with 850 prophets of Baal on the top of Mount Carmel, where he challenged them to invite their God to light a fire on an altar. Elijah's God made a way out of no way by lighting an altar that had been pre-soaked in water, after Elijah made some snarky comments about how Baal must be using the bathroom, and that's why he couldn't light his own fire. So if you've spent any time with those who have lived as close to the margins of death as Elijah did by choice and by accident, you know that those people often know in their bones what is the most important in life. I suspect this hard-won wisdom of Elijah's is what made him into the prophet that all three major Abrahamic faiths, traditions revere for guiding the faithful away from worshiping death-dealing idols and leading them to worshiping the living God. Elijah warns God's people about idols not because idols have inherent power, but because the lies that we tell ourselves about the power that they have can do real damage. He is committed to telling the truth about what idols are and forcing those in power to examine what they are getting out of the relationships with the idols of their day. I'm reminded of a lecture that I heard several years ago from Duke Divinity School professor and prosperity gospel scholar, Kate Bowler. This was before her colon cancer diagnosis, viral New York Times article, and consequent fame. She was a panelist at the Christian Community Development Association meeting when it was here in Raleigh in 2014. I think Al Rehberg was there, and I know Dwayne Beck was. Speaking to a room of those who are deeply committed from across the country, who are deeply committed to walking alongside under-resourced communities, the very communities where the prosperity gospel has gained such a hold. Prosperity gospel, which guarantees health and wealth to the faithful, because when the prayers go up, the blessings come down. The prosperity gospel argues that one's welfare is 100% within one's control because it depends entirely on one's prayer life and donations. Many in the room consider this theology toxic and exploitative because any challenges in finances, relationships, or health are considered to be caused by a lack of sincerity or frequency of prayers, and not the presence of real and systemic evil. Kate Bowler invited us to look at what the prosperity gospel is speaking into and to start from there when we encountered it in the communities we were walking with. Elijah's life and story ask us the same question. What are the idols of our day, those organizing principles of our lives that promise us control? And what are we getting out of those relationships? The suburban church where my family worshiped when I was in elementary school presented idols as like a distraction or diversion that could veer us off the path. I have a vivid memory seeing a bulletin board in the, narthex at my church that was focused on idolatry. and it had the titles of the newspaper listed as possible idols. So business, sports, entertainment, beauty, real estate. And these were all considered idols because they could distract us from our quiet time. But this definition of idolatry as distraction is itself a distraction. Idolatry is what happens when one organizes one's life to serve one of God's gifts, like security or creativity or relationships, rather than the giver of those gifts. We're still invited to tend and nurture and pursue good things in this life, but trusting in them for our deliverance will lead to our destruction. As Jesus said centuries later, "For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who want to lose their life for my sake will find it." It is a strange irony that Elijah, who lived in the shadow of the forces of death for the entirety of his ministry, narrowly avoiding dying of starvation, thirst, violence, depression, should meet the end of his own earthly life in the way that he did in our passage for today. We cannot learn from him how to suffer patiently or how to stubbornly stare down death in the face until it does not have the last word. Yet we can learn from him how to let go, how to trust that our gifts will multiply after we are gone, how to trust that others will keep watering the seeds that we have planted. We can learn from him how to receive the gift of the presence of others, even when our own feelings are too much to bear. We can learn from him how to let go of our idol of control. I suspect it was because of Elijah's familiarity with death throughout his ministry that he was able to receive the end of his life as a homegoing, a deliverance, a hearkening of something yet to come. Death, of course, creates an absence, but it also creates a mystery of anticipation, an emptiness that we don't yet know how God will fill. There's a Jewish tradition that Elijah will be the prophet to announce the coming of the Messiah. Jewish people still create space for Elijah by saving him an empty seat at their Passover meals, the meal that commemorates the deliverance, God's deliverance of the Jewish people, just in case that is the day that Elijah comes to announce the coming of the Messiah. Christians have long projected some of Elijah's importance in the Jewish faith onto our own herald of the coming Messiah, onto John the Baptist, who joyfully leapt in the womb of his mother, spoke truth to those in power, lived life on the margins, and helped others cross thresholds at the River Jordan. Both men, as they help us to turn away from the idols in the midst of our own finite lives, call us to curiosity and to hospitality. They invite us into a holy curiosity about what life might be like if we were to live with a whole and undivided heart, a curiosity about what that might be like for us and for the communities around us, and a curiosity about what we might need to let go of to create space for that. Holy curiosity opens the door for radical hospitality, to recognize the prophetic nature of those who live at life's margins, to be attuned to the hungers of the world and the hungers in our own hearts, to welcome our unvarnished selves just as we welcome the stranger and the unknown. We've had the privilege of witnessing the culmination of Elijah's life and ministry through the eyes of some incredible visual artists today: Salvador Dali, John August Swanson, and Mark Chagall. I want to close today with another extraordinary and sensitive interpretation of today's passage, the song "Elijah" by the Mountain Goats. As we prepare communion that we will share in just a little bit, may the voice of Elijah through the words of the song set the table for us to find a home in this meal that we will share today, a meal that commemorates new life that God has carried us into already through the power of the resurrection, as well as the new life yet to be born.